Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for November 2018. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. The internet is a great and wonderful thing, but what amazes me about it is how some crazy stuff can become a thing on YouTube and garner over 80 million views. The video, Honey Badger Don't Care, was just such a video. It's a short video about the life of a honey badger who doesn't seem to care about bee stings or snake bites as it hunts and eats. Its creator, Christopher Gordon, in the course of trying to monetize the success of his YouTube video, registered Honey Badger Don't Care as a trademark. Just as the honey badger fearlessly goes after snakes and just about anything, so too the trademark owner goes after a perceived infringer. It's trademark rights versus First Amendment freedom of speech rights. Eric Ball is a partner in the litigation group of Fenwick & West in Mountain View, California. Eric's practice is focused on trademark litigation and trademark trial and appeal board disputes. He also has substantial experience in trade secret, copyright, and complex commercial litigation matters. Athul Acharya is an associate in the litigation group of Fenwick & West in San Francisco and works on a broad variety of litigation matters to support clients in the technology and life sciences industries. I spoke with Eric and Athul from their offices in California.
Hello, Eric. Hello, Athul.
Hello.
Hi, great talk to you, Don.
So any lawsuit that arises out of a YouTube video called the Crazy Nasty Ass Honey Badger has to be interesting. But for anybody who has not been one of the 88 million people who viewed the video, could you please describe it in, say, 50 words or less?
Sure. So the honey badger is a carnivore from the mustelid family found all over Africa, Southeast Asia, and India. And it's a hardy creature with what Wikipedia describes as ferocious defensive abilities. And so the plaintiff in this case, Chris Gordon, he took a video of this creature hunting, killing, and eating prey and juxtaposed it with some soothing classical music and his own humorous and whimsical narration, including catchphrases like honey badger don't care and honey badger don't give a shit.
So as they say, his video went viral, and the catchphrases honey badger don't care and honey badger don't give a shit became internet memes. So the narrator tried to commercialize or monetize the video, right?
That's right, yeah. So he applied for and received a U.S. trademark registration for the honey badger don't care mark, and then he began selling merchandise with both trademarks, both honey badger don't care and don't give a shit, on coffee mugs and so on the internet and in national retailers.
And I understand he reached out to some greeting card companies, but that did not go so well?
That's right. In fact, in 2012, he discussed licensing the trademarks to American Greetings, which is actually the parent company of Drake Creative, the defendant in this case. But for whatever reason, the record's unclear, no deal was made.
And then what happened after that?
Well, later that year, perhaps modeling the audacity of the honey badger, Drape Creative, and also their co-defendants, Papyrus Recycled Greetings, began selling greeting cards featuring those same phrases juxtaposed with significant events. So, for example, a birthday card, it's a popular one, a birthday card on the face says, honey badger, heard it's your birthday, and then on the inside, honey badger, don't give a shit. And then Gordon sued for trademark infringement.
So before we talk about the Gordon versus Drape case, what was the legal landscape beforehand? And you mentioned and describe in your article the Rogers test.
So the Rogers test is all about the American First Amendment protection and your right of free expression. And it's this balance between, you know, our First Amendment right to say what we want to say and a trademark owner's right to own that trademark and say, no, you can't use my trademark in whatever you're going to say or your piece of art. So back in 1986, Federico Fellini made a film called Ginger and Fred about two fictional Italian cabaret performers who imitated the famed Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. Ginger Rogers said, hey, you can't use my likeness. You can't use my name. At least you can't use it without me getting a cut of that pie. That's, you know, that's probably where she was going, but she ended up suing. Second Circuit comes along and says, you know what? First Amendment's pretty powerful. And for a claim of trademark infringement, you have to establish that, you know, it either is has the trademark has nothing to do with the artistic relevance of the work, or that it's explicitly misleading to consumers about the source and content of that work. And in practice, this artistic relevance test, whether or not use of that trademark is artistically relevant to the work, is a really high bar. In practice, meeting the artistic relevance test has been a very low bar. Essentially, is the trademark relevant in some way to that piece of art? And if it is, then that test has been met and it's considered artistically relevant. And the explicitly misleading test has been a very high bar. It's been something, you know, you got to have some kind of almost ill intent to establish that explicitly misleading.
Now, in your article, you refer to the Barbie Girl case. And again, for uninformed listeners, in 1997, the musical group Aqua released a song called Barbie Girl, and we have a limited budget on this podcast, and I don't have copyright clearance to sing it. But the opening lines were, quote, I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. Life is plastic. It's fantastic, end quote. So could you describe the effect of the Barbie Girl case on the Rogers test?
Sure. And, you know, I think in the U.S. it would probably be fair use, but to avoid inflicting emotional distress on your listeners, I too will refrain from singing it. Yeah, so the Barbie Girl case is important because it was the first time that the Ninth Circuit imported and adopted the Rogers test. So the Rogers test was developed in the Second Circuit, which covers New York and surrounding states, and the Ninth Circuit is California and nearby states. So both obviously very important circuits for media cases. And so in the early 2000s, Mattel, the owner of the Barbie Dolls trademarks, sued MCA Records, who were selling the Aqua song Barbie Girl. The court, and they sued in the Ninth Circuit, and the court decided that the song's use of the Barbie mark was permissible because it was relevant to the song's ironic lyrics about living in a Barbie world. And it wasn't explicitly misleading. No one was listening to the song and thinking this must be, you know, endorsed and sourced from Mattel. And then later cases came along after that, in which the Ninth Circuit actually continued to apply and expand the Rogers test. So, for example, there was another Barbie satire, Tom Forsythe's Food Chain Barbie, series of photographs of Barbie in a blender and in other kitchen appliances, to a television show, Empire, which is about a record label, Empire Enterprises, that was then sued by Empire Distribution, an actual hip-hop record label, and also to the Grand Theft Auto, Madden NFL, and Gran Turismo video game series. And in all of those cases, just like in Mattel, just like in Rogers, the court determined that the public interest in free expression overrided the public interest in avoiding consumer confusion.
And I'll just add here, too, that a lot of these cases are dismissed at the early motion to dismiss stage in federal courts in the U.S. So it's not like you have to go through a lot of discovery or go to trial. They're just dismissed early on because that artistic relevance bar is so low, and there's not much confusion by the actual consumer. So it's hard for someone to prove that there's been explicitly misleading action here.
So now back to the Honey Badger decision. What happened there?
So there in Gordon, the case law actually took a turn. The court protected Gordon's trademark and said that what the card company was doing with it, said that what the card company was doing, it might violate his trademark rights.
Okay. And how did the court apply the Rogers test?
So it was turned on the first question, was a trademark artistically relevant to that work? And for the most part, the way that test has been applied is all about the relevance part. And the court here held that the greeting card were expressive works protected by the First Amendment. That's a threshold requirement. And that the Honey Badger catchphrase was certainly relevant to those expressive works. But then the court doubted that the mark was relevant to the defendant's own artistry. Basically, the court said it can't be the case that a defendant can simply copy a trademark onto its greeting card. Not add any original or any of its own artistic expression or elements, and then claim the same First Amendment protection as the original artist. Rather than decide the case on that basis, the court left it to the jury to decide going forward whether the greeting card company used the Honey Badger catchphrases for artistic reasons or whether the company was just trading on the goodwill associated with the Gordon's brand.
So what do you see as the future of the Rogers test?
Well, other courts have applied the Rogers test beyond the realm of artistic expression. We've got the case of Radiance Foundation versus NAACP out of the Fourth Circuit, and that was on some political satire. And then you have the cases like the New Kids on the Block versus New American Publishing out of the Central District of California, which is a lower court within the Ninth Circuit, and that was related news gathering. But outside of art, maybe political satire, news gathering, these are all core First Amendment categories. Outside of those, maybe you could say that the Rogers test is limited outside those core categories and doesn't extend to other commercial enterprises. But that brings me back to kind of what we were thinking about earlier is, art is in the eye of the beholder. One person's commercial enterprise, something like video games that we've seen upheld time and again as classic Rogers examples, is another person's art. Or maybe even this greeting card case. The Honey Badger hasn't won quite yet. Maybe maybe the jury will find some art in that greeting card. Or maybe the next time someone should just put some colorful honey badgers around the catchphrase and now you've got a piece of art rather than just someone copying and pasting your trademark. But, where courts have most had a problem in deciding a Rogers test is when that trademark's been used for something that's like the title of the work and not something that's kind of a piece of the art, one feature of the art. And here, this is kind of more of the, where they use it as the title of the greeting card itself. And that's probably why this case came out this way more than anything else.
Thank you very much for these insights.
Thanks very much, Don, for having us on your show.
No problem. It's been great, Don. Thank you.
Eric Ball and Athol Acharya are litigation lawyers with Fenwick & West in California. For further information on their article entitled Honey Badger Don't Care, But the Lanham Act Might, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breslin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.